In this episode, I want to take the conceptual framework and explain to you that it's not always consistently applied in particular accounting standards. And the two that I'm going to be picking on are foreign currency, IAS 21, and deferred tax, IAS 12. Now, this edition of the podcast is not for beginners, all right? It's dealing with the holistic nature of the exam and is introducing some critical elements. My name is Tom Clendon, and I help SBR students pass their SBR exam. And let's first of all think about how ISA 21 and the framework interact and are not perhaps consistent with each other. And where there is a conflict between the standard and the framework, the standard wins. We must follow the standard. So let me first of all quickly recap on what International Accounting Standard 21 says about exchange differences. If you're an individual company and you have a transaction in a foreign currency that results in an exchange difference, that gain or loss is recognized in the profit and loss account, in the income statement, in profit, for sure. However, if you've got an overseas subsidiary, the exchange difference that arises on the retranslation of the net assets and on the retranslation of the goodwill is not taken to the P&L. It's taken directly to equity and is included in other comprehensive income. So there is a natural inconsistency there as to how exchange differences are dealt with. Now, the conceptual framework prefers everything to be in the P&L. The default is that gains and losses should be reported in the P&L account, unless it is more useful not to do so, unless it is more useful to recognise them in equity, and in which case they're included in other comprehensive income. So why is it that we have this inconsistency? Well, for me, actually, I'm very comfortable that at the individual company stage, the exchange differences are going to profit. Because they relate to transactions, so therefore they're realised, or they relate to the retranslation of monetary items, debtors, creditors, in which case they're very nearly realised, and they arise from operating activities. They arise from day-to-day transactions. But in the group context, the exchange difference arises because you've retranslated net assets and goodwill. And that's certainly not realised. It's certainly not a day-to-day transaction. And in the long term, it's likely to be reversed. So actually, I am comfortable that exchange differences at the group stage aren't included in profit. Yeah, because I want profit to be relevant. I want profit to be predictable. The framework says useful information is relevant, which means it's predictable. And if we start including these long-term unrealized exchange differences on net assets and goodwill in the P&L, then arguably the P&L is not going to be predictive. It's going to be full of rubbish. So we take it directly to equity and include it in other comprehensive income for completeness sake. So investors, users are being told about the exchange difference, but not in the P&L, instead in other comprehensive income. So although there is an inconsistency in the way that exchange differences are dealt with, which reduces comparability, which, you know, is one of those enhancing characteristics of useful information, I actually am comfortable, broadly speaking, with that distinction by ISA 21. Right, deferred tax. Let's think about how deferred tax interacts with the framework and whether or not there's any inconsistencies happening here. So first of all, let me recap on deferred tax. If you revalue an asset, whether it's PPE or whether it's a financial asset, and there's a gain, that increases the carrying value of the asset, and that creates a taxable temporary difference, which gives rise to a deferred tax liability. Because a revaluation of an asset doesn't change the tax base. There's no current tax liability to pay when you revalue an asset. So the carrying value goes up, the tax base remains the same, and there is a deferred tax liability to be accounted for. But really, ISA 12 is about the matching concept. So the revaluation needs to have a tax expense to be paired with it. And that's really why we're accounting for deferred tax on revaluations. But we do also recognise a deferred tax liability. So that's what the standard says. Now, the standard also says there's no discounting, that you don't discount the deferred tax liability in these circumstances, or in fact, in any circumstances. Now, that's inconsistent. That's not what you do if you've got a long-term provision. If you've got a non-current liability, remember, deferred tax is a non-current liability. If you've got a provision for decommissioning an oil rig, that's discounted. Time value of money is taken into account. If you've got a pension fund deficit, if you've got a defined benefit pension scheme, that's at present value, that's discounted. If you've got a financial instrument, if you've got a liability, a loan, that's interest bearing, that's discounted. So there's an inconsistency going on here. But the reason why deferred tax is not discounted is purely on a practical basis. We don't know when we're going to have to pay that tax, because that tax is not due until you sell the asset that you've revalued. And you don't know whether we're going to sell that asset in 2 years' time or 20 years' time. So we just don't know whether to discount it by 2 years or 20 years. So it's a practical reason rather than a conceptual reason why we don't discount deferred tax liabilities. But it does point to the idea that actually deferred tax is not a present obligation, because we're not presently obliged to sell the asset. We're not presently obliged to pay the tax. And the conceptual framework defines a liability in terms of it being a present obligation. So there is a very compelling argument that, strictly speaking, deferred tax should not be recognised as a liability at all, because it's inconsistent with the framework. You can listen to this podcast again to follow my chain of argument if you haven't got it first time. But as I have said before, and I will say again, where there is a conflict between the standard and the framework, follow the standard. So we do provide for deferred tax, even though some argue that it's contrary to the framework and inconsistent with the definition of a liability. Wow. Thank you for listening. I'm glad you got this far. I help students pass SBR. I'm an online lecturer. I am readily available. My WhatsApp number is 07725 350793. I'm more than happy to hear from you. Thank you for listening.